oral questions by members.
Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday, the Premier assured British Columbians that when it comes to vaccine supply, it is, and I quote, full steam ahead. Over a million doses of Pfizer and 846,000 Moderna shots are set to arrive in British Columbia this week. Thousands of AstraZeneca shots expire on April the 2nd, and there are more on the way. But now there is confusion and concern about the growing number of unused COVID-19 doses because of the lack of a province-wide online registration and booking system, with five different health authorities, five different phone numbers, and one of them partially online. People are worried, and rightly so, about how a province-wide online and booking registration system will be up and running on April the 6th. The Premier made a promise. He said that the transition from phone booking to a single online registration system will be open on April the 6th. So today, will the Premier confirm that the system will be in place and running at full capacity on April the 6th?
Premier.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker, and I thank the Leader of the Opposition for her question. And I can confirm that it is our belief and strongly held view that on the 6th of April, we will have our province-wide online system up and running. And I want to acknowledge, as I have the opportunity, the extraordinary work of people right across the province and all the health authorities. And the member will know, and other members will know, that we have five health authorities and the First Nations Health Authority as well that know best what goes on in their communities. And I used an example yesterday of the mass immunization in Prince Rupert undertaken by Northern Health. All of us will know that we get correspondence, we get casework in our constituency offices, oftentimes frustrated by health authorities not meeting the expectations of patients, of British Columbians. And I was heartened to hear from the member for North Coast that the uniform enthusiasm for the hard work of Northern Health spread right through Prince Rupert and into Port Ed. So when there's agreement between those two communities, you know you're on the right track.
Leader of the Official Opposition on supplemental.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and all of us are absolutely grateful that people across British Columbia are receiving vaccinations. But we're also equally concerned that the number of unused doses yesterday actually exceeded 200,000. So vaccines arrive in British Columbia, and what we want to ensure is that they get into the arms of British Columbians as quickly as possible. This is not about the individual health authorities. It's about the fact that this Premier and government had over a year to plan, to prepare, and ensure that there was an online province-wide system in place to make sure that those shots were used as expeditiously as possible. And yet this week, unbelievably, the NDP took the opportunity to send a fundraising email using the pandemic, basically saying that the vaccine rollout is so far ahead that now we could use some donations so we can focus on other things. How appropriate is that? Frankly, the Premier needs to keep his eye on the ball here. We have, in British Columbia today, over 200,000 doses of vaccine that are sitting, waiting to get into the arms of British Columbians. It requires a province-wide booking and registration system. So again, to the Premier, he's made a promise. He said, finally, on April the 6th, we're going to have that system. My question is very specific. Will that transition from phone in five health authorities to an online system be fully operational and effectively operating on April the 6th?
Premier.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. And the straight answer to the member is the same as the first one. Yes, it will be up and running. And I want to just unpack some of the comments the member made. We have had a year of global pandemic. We have not had a year of supply of vaccine. We have had a year of people holding fast against an extraordinary enemy, one that's not seen, one that knows no boundaries, it knows no ethnicity, it knows no height, it knows no gender. And Canadians and British Columbians particularly have been resilient in that fight against COVID-19. We do not have unallocated vaccine. We're not storing things up for a sunny day. We are taking the vaccines as they come, and we're apportioning them as the public health officer determines is in the best interest of quelling outbreaks, the best interest of going through the vulnerable populations. We are on to 75-year-olds today, 74-year-olds tomorrow, and that will continue as we move into April and into the next phase of the vaccination program. I do also want to say that there are headlines and stories about concerns about supply. We've had these challenges, not just British Columbians, but all Canadians, because we don't have domestic supply. And that blame goes back over decades of federal irresponsibility, quite frankly, over successive governments of different political stripes, allowing that sector to atrophy and be replaced by offshore supply. So we're dependent on others to get vaccines into British Columbia, but we are absolutely committed to making sure that every drop of vaccine that arrives in British Columbia goes into a British Columbian so that we can get back to normal as fast as possible.
Member for Kelowna Mission.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. Well, maybe the Premier doesn't watch the numbers as closely as we are, because we're watching the amount of unused doses rise, and it's alarming. We're behind the eight ball, not just with the lack of preparation in creating an online booking system that every other jurisdiction across Canada seems to have, but also the lack of plan for community pharmacies. Only in the last few weeks have they even been contacted, while other Canadian jurisdictions, well, they've announced their plans to engage pharmacists months ago. Pharmacies are critical to preventing stockpiles of these unused and, worse yet, almost expiring vaccines. But they need 6 weeks to actually mobilize. The Premier's decision to not involve pharmacists is costing valuable time and results in more transmission, the growth of variants, hospitalizations, and, sadly, death. To the Premier, where is the plan to empower our province's highly trained community pharmacists to join the fight?
Minister of Health.
Well, Honourable Speaker, I don't know where to start with such a list of quite inaccurate statements. As of Sunday, we had 1 day of supply of Pfizer. We were left with 14,000 doses because we used it all up to that point. Then this week, we've received doses of more than, well, over 100,000 doses that have arrived and are now being used. So when the member states that there are unused doses not being used because of the vaccination campaign, this is just simply incorrect on the facts. When she asserts, as she did, that is leading to people passing away, she's simply incorrect on as to the facts. Yesterday was a record day for vaccinations in British Columbia, over 27,000, 610,000 doses have been delivered, more than 520,000 first doses have been delivered. And the reason those numbers are the cases is that's the vaccine we've received. You cannot deliver more Pfizer than we had delivered as of Sunday. And then we receive more, and then we deliver more. And the idea that 105,000 doses would arrive on Monday and they'd be immediately delivered, which seems to be the assertion of the member, is, shall I say, not consistent with reality. In any event, we have a vaccination campaign that has been well laid out, that's focused on those that need it most. Its effects already have been profound in long-term care, and I appreciate the support of all members, because I know all members are doing this, in ensuring that members of the public have the information they need to go forward. Community pharmacy will play a central role in this as well, as we go forward and as we get more doses to immunize people with.
Thank you, Minister. Leader of Third Party.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. Today, the BC Supreme Court is hearing forest company Teal Jones's application for an injunction against the protesters at Ferry Creek. If the injunction is granted, we could see people arrested for attempting to stop preparations for logging in the last intact ancient forest valley on southern Vancouver Island. This could take place no less in the Premier's own riding, on the watch of an NDP government that has promised to do things differently on old growth, on the watch of a Premier who committed during the recent snap election to implement all of the Old Growth Panel's recommendations, including immediate deferrals in ancient forests just like this one. Honorable Speaker, if Ferry Creek doesn't qualify for immediate protections, I'm not sure what does. My question is to every member of government, really, but I'll direct my question to the Premier. Is the Premier and his caucus okay with this being their legacy? Or will they step up and come to the table with real economic alternatives to logging old growth and provide a way forward to save Ferry Creek?
Minister of Forests, Land, Natural Resource Operations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the question from the leader of the third party. BC forests are a big part of what makes our province so unique and so special. And our government knows that old growth trees are an integral part of a healthy ecosystem. And for many, many years, the former Liberal government, they took an unbalanced and unsustainable approach to managing our old growth forests, and we are making different choices. Our government is bringing in a fundamental shift in forestry to protect and preserve old growth forests and for today and for years to come. And we will do this while supporting forest workers and forest-dependent communities. You know, we received clear advice and clear recommendations from the independent panel on how we can do this. And we are dedicated to implementing the 14 recommendations, and the work has already started. In fact, as a first step, we worked with Indigenous nations and government-to-government discussions across the province to look at 9 deferred areas where we deferred old-growth forests that are protected in those 9 areas. And we will continue to do more. We know that this is just a first step, and there is much more to do, and we will do that.
Leader of Third Party on Supplemental.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. I'm actually astonished that my question was specifically about Ferry Creek. The Minister of Forest didn't mention it once. And just to be clear, this is the last intact old growth valley south of Clackwit Sound on Vancouver Island, the last one. And so 30 years from now, we will have to look at our grandchildren and say, hey, either we let it go because it didn't matter, we didn't value it, your future, your ability to go into an intact old growth forest didn't matter enough. Or we say, this is the moment to make the decision. This is the time. This is the government that promised to do it, and they're going to follow through on it. Making different choices, following the advice of the panel. The advice of the panel was immediate deferrals on exactly this kind of watershed and ancient forest. This government has an opportunity in front of them right now to show that they actually meant what they said when they made promises in a snap election that we didn't need to have. The question is to the Premier, Honourable Speaker, will his government rise to the moment of this important decision? Halt the road building and preparation for logging in this intact rainforest and come to the table with financial alternatives for supports in order to provide an actual long-term solution to save this watershed.
Minister of Forests.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, I too have a vision. I have a vision about our forest industry. I have a vision about the forests in this province, and I want to ensure that we have a sustained, well-managed forest industry. And I also also have a vision, and the member should, maybe the member would like to listen to it. So my vision is, I also have grandchildren, and I want, if my grandchildren choose, they are from the age of 4 to 20. If my grandchildren choose, I want them, when they are ready, I want them to have the ability to work in a well-managed forestry, but I also want them to have the ability to be able to walk in an old growth forest anywhere in this province, because there is old growth forest, 10,000 hectares of old growth forest across this province, which have not been logged and are protected and will not be logged. And the member is inaccurate in her numbers. She likes to put out numbers. I don't know. I would love to meet with her to talk to her and have a briefing on where she's getting her numbers from, because they are inaccurate. We are dedicated to implementing the recommendations from the old growth forest report, and we will do that. We are also dedicated to working in government-to-government discussions with Indigenous nations, and we are doing just that with the Patchadat Nation. We are doing that with other nations across this province, and those are government-to-government discussions that are confidential and would be inappropriate for me to discuss in a public venue.
Minister.
But we are committed. We are committed to continuing through this important work, having those discussions with Indigenous nations, talking to the workers, talking to industry, talking to communities are dependent. And we will continue to do that.
Thank you, Minister.
Because we want to ensure that there's old growth forest in this province for years to come.
Member for Kamloops South Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, while the Premier doled out $645,000 for one single-user toilet in the city of Vancouver, he has completely botched the Small Business Recovery Grant Program for small businesses. South Thompson Inn owner David Patrikin had this to say, and I quote, "In 2019, we invested in upgrades, which resulted in us not being profitable for that year. This makes us ineligible to receive the recovery grant," end quote. Ohana Deli owner Bobby Lyle said, and I quote, "Our life savings went into building our business, and our revenues have been down between 50% and 100%, depending on the month, because we haven't been in business for the required 18 months. So we're ineligible. If all else fails, we would happily take the toilet paper holder from that new bathroom in Vancouver. It must be worth at least $10,000, end quote. Unfortunately, it's too late for Lisa's School of Dance, which is closing its doors forever. Owner Lisa Dew had this to say, and I quote, "There have been countless tears, months of sleepless nights, and anxiety-ridden days. Between financial losses and the government's let's-wait-and-see mindset, there is no way to sustain our business. There isn't enough support for small business right now," end quote. Mr. Speaker, no further meetings or consultations, engagements are going to help these small businesses or the thousands of others just like them who to this day are still not eligible for the business recovery grant. So my question is this: will the Premier make further changes to the eligibility requirements of the business recovery grant so that businesses like Ohana Deli and the South Thompson Inn will not have to make the same gut-wrenching decision to close their doors forever, just like Lisa's School of Dance?
Minister of Jobs, Economic Recovery and Innovation.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker, and thank you to the member for the question. He mentioned some of the businesses. My office did reach out to his office, I'm sure he's aware, yesterday when he raised these businesses in particular, and we offered to reach out to the businesses directly to help them navigate what programs and supports are available to them. The member will know December 21st.
Members, let's hear the answer.
The member will know December 21st, we went to the business community and said, what changes would you like? We accepted all their changes at that time, Honourable Speaker. We saw a steady increase in applications. Then we followed up with them in February and said, what additional changes do you think could be used or required to make the program more accessible and more inclusive to more businesses? And we accepted those changes as well. We're trying to be as flexible and nimble as we can. We know the needs are changing for businesses as the pandemic changes, and we've been adjusting accordingly. Honourable Speaker, we're proud on this side of the House, and the members should be proud as well. Highest per capita supports in all of Canada, BC, we're providing right now. Honourable Speaker, But
Minister will continue.
Honourable Speaker, between all the supports the province is providing, as well as the dollars Canada is providing, we've been able to help a lot of businesses. Even struggling political parties have benefited from the dollars.
Member for Abbotsford West.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. Well, sadly, on April the 1st, the Premier and his government will once again discriminate against the 17,000 workers who choose not to become a member of a trade union and work in the community social services sector. Here's what Ernie Batts, who's executive director of the Spectrum Society for Community Living, says, quote, "We have tried for years to get the Premier to take the issue of pay equity seriously and have been met with inattention and inaction. The only explanation we receive is that they have made the decision to compensate people less if they are not part of a union. The wages of 32,000 frontline workers in BC's community social services sector are funded directly by the province. The 17,000 workers who choose not to belong to a union are not getting the same wage increase as others merely because they exercised that choice and that right. They are being discriminated against by this government for exercising their rights, Mr. Speaker. Will the Premier end the discrimination? Will he demonstrate that his government is prepared to abide by the same standard they call upon others to exercise and end the discrimination that it is perpetrating against 17,000 women and men in this important sector?"
Minister of Social Development and Poverty Reduction.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I'd like to thank the member opposite for his question. This is a historical issue, one that I'm really proud that our government is taking on head on. People who work in the community social service sector, who I know and who I work with and I've worked with in the past, are valued community members, valued people in our social service support sector, and they are appreciated. And our continued discussion with the sector, something that we've done that the previous government didn't do, we're actually addressing these issues. We're getting together and working collaboratively to find a solution. And I expect that that work is going to continue in a atmosphere of cooperation. That is the continued work of our government. And I thank the member for the question.
Member for West Vancouver, Capilano.
Mr. Speaker, new child care regulations are taking place on April the 1st. These are going to result in the loss of thousands of child care spaces and financial hardship on child care providers. You've already heard directly from a lot of these providers. They're very upset, and these pleas have been ignored. Here's another one from yesterday. Nurture Early Childhood Education Centre here in Victoria holds a wait list of 180 families. Mr. Speaker, as a direct result of these new regulations, they are cancelling plans for two new facilities with 60 affordable spaces for preschool-aged children. This is what Jennifer Delaney has to say about the April 1 changes. Quote, "It will have devastating effects on the child care sector. This will negatively and severely impact the creation of new child care spaces in British Columbia," end quote. Will the Premier reconsider this devastating change before thousands of child care spaces are lost on April 1st?
Minister of State for Child Care.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. I want to emphasize that Our fee reduction program is a program to bring relief to BC families. And during the past 3.5 short years, we have brought a fee reduction to tens and thousands of families in BC that has never happened before. And we're proud of the work that we're doing. And over 90% of providers have joined our fee reduction program, which is an optional program. And we will need to make sure when we are using public dollars to support childcare and support fee reduction for parents, that there has to be accountability. And this new measure is really to provide a level playing field. And we've heard a lot from existing providers asking for a level playing field to make sure that there's accountability when a new childcare facility wants to apply and join this optional program. Honorable Speaker, our government has done a lot in the past 3.5 short years to make sure for the first time in BC's history, childcare fees is going down for BC parents after years of neglect from the former BC Liberal government.
Member for Fraser-Nicola.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The report left out by the representative for children and youth tells heartbreaking stories about the impact of the pandemic on families. I quote, "It is the representative's view that many families and caregivers are reaching the breaking point. The disruption of the pandemic continues to reverberate in the lives of children and youth with special needs." End quote. The representative made a very clear recommendation, calling on this government to restore pandemic supports of $225 a month for 1 year. To the Premier, will he restore the pandemic benefits that are desperately needed for children and youth with special needs?
Minister.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker, and I thank the member for the question as well. And I would like to thank the representative for children and youth, and especially thank all the families who helped the representative's office in creating that report. And I share many of the representative's concerns, Honourable Speaker, and we did actually roll out some emergency measures during the pandemic because we recognised the struggle facing these families, especially during and on a daily basis. Many families are struggling, juggling daily life and taking care of their families, but especially during this pandemic. And what families said to us, Honourable Speaker, was they wanted flexibility in funding. And we provided that flexibility in their respite funding, and we've extended that emergency measure to the end of March 2022.
Member for Kamloops, North Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, in Abbotsford, the mum of an Indigenous teen who was found dead in a closet of a group home last September is seeking answers. She wants to know why it took 4 days for Trayvon to be found by staff in the closet where he hung himself. She wants to know why staff threw his belongings in the dumpster. Answers have not been forthcoming from this government, though, sadly, Mr. Speaker. Trayvon's mother has been forced to set up a GoFundMe page in order to hire a lawyer to seek answers. So, Mr. Speaker, does the Premier believe that a GoFundMe campaign is the only way for a grieving mother to get appropriate answers about the death of her child that was in care?
Minister of Children and Family Development.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker, and thank you to the member for raising this question. In situations like this, it's an absolute tragedy, and my heart goes out to the family and everybody who knew the young person and knew the family and were involved. As the member will know, it is not possible for me as the minister to comment on any individual situations or even comment on whether the ministry has been involved with the family. Thank you.
Member for Kamloops North Thompson, supplemental.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. And this government spent years bringing up issues like this. This situation, unfortunately, happens when youth are in care, and families seek answers. The minister does not want to speak about this particular individual case, so I'll reframe the question then. has the minister, has the premier initiated a change to policy so that grieving families of youth in care can have support from government to seek answers that they desperately need with the tragic loss of life, instead of having to start creating GoFundMe pages to seek those answers from government?
Minister of Children and Family Development.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker, and thank you again to the member for the question. And I can assure the member that our ministry is absolutely committed to making sure that children and youth are kept safe and that they're able to thrive and they're protected every single day. I have every confidence that our staff in the ministry is supporting all children and youth that we're responsible for. And in situations, Honourable Speaker, where there is a tragedy or there is a critical incident, I can absolutely assure the member that our staff takes very swift action and makes sure that all children and youth in any facility or related to any home situation are taken care of, and that their safety is safeguarded and that the family is supported. Honourable Speaker, we have taken many actions to change the whole system of Indigenous child welfare in our province. There is a lot more work to do, but we're working with Indigenous communities and families to make sure that Indigenous children and youth stay connected to their family, to their communities, and to their culture. And we currently have the lowest number of children in care in 30 years and Indigenous children in care in 20 years.